This feels show busy.
Boy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're right in the middle of show business when we play this song.
Bert Convy just walked in.
Hello, Bert Convy.
Hello, Bill.
Boy, I miss Bert Convy. That's an amazing impression of Bert Convy. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and famed Bert Convy impersonator Wendy Snyder welcoming you aboard. Welcome to the show. Give us a call. Give us a text. We'd love to hear from you. All right, a couple things. Thing number one, and I know this is inside. I understand that this is very inside, but our station, WGN, switched buildings a couple of months ago. We're now in a new facility, and part of moving to the building was there's some agreement made where we have to have some sort of training about the building.
Well, don't you want to know?
Let me show you something. In case of a fire.
Bert Convy?
No, this is Fire Marshal Bill.
I thought that was Bert Convy again. Yes.
You got to know.
It really is a good idea for anybody in a building of any kind to know where the emergency exits are, to know strategy if something goes wrong inside the building.
Who to use as a human shield, which I think you'd use me.
I would use you as a human shield. There's no doubt about that.
I know.
There's no doubt about that.
She's a wonderful human shield.
I am. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ryan. All right. So what they did was they designated a day, and it's today, where three different times during the day, groups of us who work here for the Tribune, for WGN, will sit down and discuss these things and I guess see a slide presentation or know where all the exits are. Ryan, you already went through this.
I did. I did the 6 a.m. one. Yep.
Ryan Burrow, of course.
Hi, of course.
From our newsroom.
Hi, Ryan. Hi.
So you went to the 6 a.m. because to fit into your schedule,
yeah.
They have a 6 a.m. and 11 a.m., which...
We can't do because we're doing the show.
Or we get off the air at 1 and then there's a 3 p.m.
Right. Right, right, right.
See you there.
Right.
Got to do one of them.
It's going to be a party at 3 o'clock.
You're going there too?
You bet.
This is mandatory.
Now you're there.
Now ours was in the conference room. I think those other two are going to be down in the bigger areas on the second floor.
Oh.
They've got a bigger meeting room.
Oh.
Because no one wanted to come at 6 a.m.
Well, I think you're going to have too many. Well, I think you're going to have too many people, yeah, to fit in the conference room.
Now, we were told, we got the email, you know, put aside an hour of time because this is from, you know, it's a one-hour training session,
right.
Basically.
Right. And you went through this, Ryan, and was it an hour?
It was an hour plus about another hour.
Oh, it was almost 2 hours.
Oh,
look, I'm gonna tell you right now, and I want to preface this by saying, yes, I did not expect it to take 2 hours. There is a lot of very valuable information in there. Do you guys know where the exit routes are right now? Do you know where the stairs are?
No, and quite honestly, we were on the first floor before, and that's what I told you. I was apprehensive about moving up to the 18th floor because if there was a fire or a situation, we basically could just walk outside.
Right.
It's way different now, and there's something called active shooter drills,
sure,
that we need to know now.
From the fire perspective, this building is actually amazing compared to where we were at the Tribune Tower. It's
really?
It's newly built. It's pretty much steel and concrete.
Sprinklers?
Sprinklers are everywhere. And by the way, these sprinklers, which you can see those little metal pieces that are kind of up on, they will be activated not if smoke. So if you bring in burnt popcorn, don't worry about it going off. But they have to be activated at 135 degrees. Once a temperature hits that, then they are activated. But I learned a ton of valuable information. You know, we focused on the, you know, you guys remember the fire a few years ago at 69 West Washington,
yes,
downtown? Six,
yes,
people died.
Yes.
And the city has learned a lot from that point.
Okay, so if we just listen to what Ryan tells us, can we test out and not have to go?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
There are gaps now, actually, in between where the offices are and where the stairwell is, and those gaps have vents in them to prevent. So if smoke is pouring in, those doors should serve as barriers to pull some of the smoke out so people don't get trapped in these stairwells with smoke coming in like they...
Which is what
like
has happened in the past.
Is this still true? This used to be true. I don't know if it's still true or not, but I like to think it is, that if there is a fire in your building, the last thing you want to do is get on an elevator, right?
Yes, and in fact, what will happen is it recalls all of the elevators, so they will immediately go down to the bottom floor, and only the firefighters can use a key to go up to the floor they need to. So those won't work.
That's high tech.
Now, the other thing is, too, if there's a fire, we're on 18 right now, and if there's a fire on 6, they want us to just stay put.
Don't go away.
Unless the fire is on your floor, unless you are visually seeing the fire or you have been commanded to leave by some of these speakers we've got on our fire alarms, they say, stay where you are. Part of the other problem they had on 69 West Washington is everyone flooded those stairwells.
Yeah.
And
I gotta be honest with you. I'm gonna have a tough time staying here if this building's on fire, Bill.
You'll be in last.
Be honest.
You would finish dead last.
No. aren't you going to have a difficult time, like, remaining on this floor if we hear the buildings on fire?
There's more danger if you're trying to, flood a stairwell or walk difficult. Into a fire.
We can all just skit together and share our strength.
That'll go quickly.
We won't go together. We won't go together.
Well, that's going to be difficult.
Why don't they say only those of you who are incredibly fit, you guys try your best to escape, but the rest of you sit tight, Wendy.
All right, A, you're an ass. Two, that doesn't, no. Okay, women and children first. That's why you want to go first.
Right. That's why I dress the way I dress, so that I'll be, people will go, let the little boy through.
I get it, because there are, even in a high rise, this has been like that in the past. You feel the door, see if it's hot, like if you're in an apartment building.
Yeah.
I said if-in. Yes, I did.
If-in.
And then you are sometimes supposed to stay put. I'm just saying, emotionally, that's going to be difficult for me, knowing that there's a fire below us and we're just sitting
against the grain.
Here's the thing, Wendy. After 2 hours in the meeting today, you'll be convinced.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that we learned, too, there's a fire station right under us here.
Oh, there
what?
Is?
Well, it's right down here. Have you seen it on
Columbus? Oh, I have seen it. All right, I'm feeling good now.
Well, but here's the thing.
They have a snorkel?
They need two engines. If someone calls 911, they're going to need two companies. And if they're out on another call somewhere, they actually have to physically wait for another company to come in here. So even though they're right next door, it doesn't mean they're going to be able to move much faster, because they've got all these procedures that they need to go through. The other thing we learned, too, is there's a difference between a smoke detector call, which they're alerted to immediately, and someone who calls 911. All of a sudden, that ups the level
that's
a little bit.
Priority.
And now you need to bring in three ambulances and everything like that.
So, I'm asking a question that I don't want to know the answer to, I don't think. But the snorkel, how far does it go? Does it make it to 18?
No. In fact, 70 feet is, well, no, okay, anything over, we learned anything over 75 feet is considered a skyscraper, and the ladders can only reach up to 100 feet in Chicago.
How many floors is that?
About 7 stories.
Okay. Oh, on a normal God.
Building. Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot of interesting stuff that I don't really need to know, I think.
You just need to know the exits pointed out like an airplane,
right?
And what to do. Don't get on the elevator.
Right. Right.
Look for the person wearing the vest.
Yeah.
And be nice to one another.
A lot of our concern, obviously, was with the active shooter situation. Yeah. We've seen that a lot lately. We've seen media outlets being targeted. So obviously that was a big concern. And, we talked about locking doors. And, the one thing that he talked about, and the one thing that I learned doing the school shooter training is, your first instinct can't be to barricade yourself or hide. Your first instinct should be to run. And in Columbine, one of the issues that they had was everyone ran into the library when these gunmen were walking through the hallways. There was an exit right there. They could have left.
Yeah.
They could have left the building, but instead they decided to barricade themselves and hide, and they were like sitting ducks, unfortunately, when the gunman came in. So, the first instinct shouldn't be to lock yourself in a bathroom or find your first instinct, if you have the opportunity, is to get the heck out of there.
That's for an active shooter, but for a fire, you're probably required to stay where you are.
Exactly, yeah, and it's all confusing. The commands, all the commands for the will be announced through these speakers.
God, I hope the person on duty that day knows which one to tell us.
Right.
Ma'am, you're going to want to stay where you are.
Scratch that. I mean, run.
All right, if you're
stop,
on 18,
drop, and
get
run.
The heck out.
You know the building that Panera Bread is in on Michigan Avenue, the one that was kind of across the street from us and just a little bit north?
Yes.
All right. So a couple years ago, I was in there getting lunch when all of a sudden the building had a fire drill.
Sure.
So I explained to one of the fire marshals that I'm not a resident of the building. I'm just getting lunch. And he just stares at me and he goes, are you in the building? I go, I am in the building. He goes, you're also in the fire alarm.
Look at Bill trying to get himself out.
Well,
I don't have time for this.
I had to get back to work.
Right.
This is when we were doing the split
Corner Bakery,
shift.
By the way.
It was Corner
right?
Bakery, yeah. Right. Yeah. So I went through the building's whole fire drill, and one of the things they explained, I also had to pay a month's rent.
Did you eat your lunch while it was going
yes,
on?
Yes, yeah. I want some cavatappi. Let me have some of that cavatappi. So one of the things they explained, and I never really thought about this, is on the lower floors especially, the last thing you want to do is open a window. So I'm thinking, because at that point I was directed to the second floor, and I go, I'll just knock out a window and escape that way.
Sure.
Not in case of a fire, but to get out of the fire drill. I just wanted to get out of there. So they explained to us that it makes the fire spread so much faster if there's oxygen.
Didn't you see backdraft?
I saw it, but I... I don't know. I wasn't paying that much attention to the technical aspect of it that at that time.
Riddle me this, Batman.
Yes. Normally, I always do pay attention to the technical aspects.
You're on the first floor. Right. There's a fire. They're not going to move you up to the second floor.
For the fire drill, I was on the first floor, but they made us all go up to the second floor. I don't know why.
That seems stupid.
Well, they had like a presentation planned. Okay. There was a room, and sure. You know, so that's why.
Well, you already did the training. You don't need to do this one then.
But yeah, that's what I'll say today.
Let's test out.
Was it the Panera explanation? But one of the women suggested that. She goes, "Well, we'll just knock out these windows and we'll escape that way." And I'm like, "That's a great idea." And then they explained no, and I go, "What a stupid idea! Why would you even?" Why would you even say that aloud?
Wait, I've been in and out of this. So are you telling me you went to the corner bakery to order lunch and you ended up participating in a Q&A on
correct.
A fire drill?
Yes, for 45
only
minutes.
Only Bill left.
Are you kidding me?
No.
He actually ran the seminar. It was crazy.
Were you handcuffed?
I mean, no, I was just
walk out. Yeah, why didn't you just walk out?
There's a guy there, a fireman there, with an axe. And I
he's
go,
not going to hurt
could,
you.
If I could just go, I just wanted to have lunch.
My
and he goes,
soup
no,
is getting cool.
I know.
You know, it's interesting. I was, my wife and I, it was Valentine's Day weekend. We went to a bar restaurant in Arlington Heights, and the fire alarm started going off, and it was sounding off, and the strobe light was flashing. We all just kind of looked at each other like
no one got up and
no
walked
one
out
got up and, we literally there were about half dozen Arlington Heights firefighters coming through the front door checking something, and you know, we didn't want
don't
to leave.
You assume, and maybe it's because
someone
in school
us.
It
someone
was always
tap on
a
shoulder.
Drill, so you hear that thing and you go, it's a drill, it's another drill. People just tell themselves that.
I still will walk outside.
Would
if
you?
I was at a restaurant and the things were going off and
would
the lights...
a great opportunity to dine and dash. Right?
Were you almost finished?
Kind
but
of.
why did no one took control and said this is only a drill or
I
this is a false alarm?
I wasn't seeing the bartender
don't count
panic.
On anyone
I know
else.
I wasn't seeing the bartender or the kitchen staff panic, so I think we all just kind of thought, well, I don't want my food to get cold, you know.
Ryan, thanks for the information. We're all looking forward to this meeting later today.
Okay.
With
speak
the
for
escape
yourself.
Routes.
All right. So you prepare to break windows and scale
yes.
the building. Yeah.
I got all kinds of plans in place. Thanks, Ryan. We really appreciate it. A quick break and then more show. This is not a drill. This is the actual show. It's Bill and Wendy. Will you at some point in the show do more Brit Convy for me? That was the most enjoyable thing ever. You don't have
no.
to say when. Just throw it in somewhere. We're talking about what's going on here at our building. At some point today, Wendy and I will have to go through some sort of training, escape route training, just should something bad go on during our shift.
Which I was just binging The Office, and there was a particular moment where the fire alarm goes off. There was an actual fire in the office, and Dwight Schrute was army crawling.
Yeah.
He was grabbing the fire extinguisher. And Michael Scott, who you are friends with, was mm-hmm. the first one to go out.
Steve Carell's character decided, get out while the getting's good.
And he, you know, it comes him. Back and it's like, okay, yeah, I was the first one out, but I was checking out the scene there, making sure it was
sure.
safe.
Of course.
That will be you.
That makes sense.
You learned that from him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, Judy, this is caller Judy. You had, you were in this building?
No, I lost my job, and I had a job interview in Philadelphia, and I broke my leg on Friday, and on Monday I had the interview, and I went to the Sigma building, and I went for the interview, and I'm terrible on crutches, my foot was swollen, I was taking Vicodin, the man I was going to work for decided to go to the food court in the basement where I hobbled after him sweating, then we went up the escalator, and we sat down, I thought, oh, thank God. And it was a bomb threat. We had to get on the escalator, go outside, and here I am with no place to sit on crutches with this guy for the interview. And it was the most horrendous experience of my life. And the man was so unsympathetic. I thought, I don't want to work for you, even if you ask me. That's there.
That's
so I just wanted to tell that story.
That's hysterical. Great first day.
Yeah, but you didn't get the job, I'm taking it.
No, I didn't get the job. I mean, a sweating, panting woman on crutches, and it's just not...
on Vicodin.
It's not a desirable candidate. Yeah, on Vicodin. I know. I was not going to take it 10 more at that point, because I was standing there with no place to sit. So, but it was really funny. So thanks for taking my
thanks,
call.
Thanks, Judy.
Thank
Have a great
you.
Day.
See, and that's scary to me in this day and age. You really, I mean... In the old days, you worked at a building and you had someone on your staff that was the, like, fire marshal.
Sure.
And, you know, various shifts, someone would be in control of it.
Yep.
And that's what you worried about was, you know, we worked in the Hancock building on the 37th floor.
Yeah.
You know, the snorkels couldn't reach that either.
Uh-uh.
But you never worried about an active shooter back then. Now it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, you know, we've discussed this in the past. A lot of schools have active shooter drills, and you say to yourself, oh, how awful for a kid to have to go through that. And it is, but it's probably in everyone's best interest, right?
My son had a couple of them at high school, and I said, were you nervous? Did it scare you? He goes, no, it's actually good stuff to know.
It is good stuff to know.
Yeah, because...
Are they really called snorkels? You keep saying snorkels.
Cherry pickers, what do you call them?
I don't know, but I would have said that too until I started thinking about it. That doesn't seem right.
I've heard they've been referred to as both. I don't.
Well, I think
yeah,
they're
I think you're
a
okay
snorkel.
Way, I think,
but a
yeah.
snorkel when you snorkel in the water,
right?
My dad was a volunteer fireman in Brookfield and president of the Civil Defense, and he called them snorkels.
Oh,
I don't know, 50 years ago. So
yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's a firefighter listening that can set us straight.
I think you can refer to them as either one, I think.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. It just seemed kind of odd.
Really big ladder machines? Is
yeah,
that
the ladder?
Say that.
Ladder.
Let's go with that.
Better.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Something else that matters is a building safety session that we're going to take today. I had mentioned snorkels being on a fire truck. Bertrand wanted to know if that's still a thing. Brian has the answer.
Yes, the snorkel is, strictly speaking, a type of fire truck that's basically a very large boom truck. And the bucket has a water gun on it that the fireman uses to put out the fire. Chicago Fire Department actually basically invented them in the 1950s. If you look at old pictures of the Our Lady of Angel School Fire, you will see snorkels being used to help put out that fire.
Do they still call them snorkels, or do they now refer to them as ladder trucks?
The ladder truck, even if it has a water cannon on the end in the bucket, would be a slightly different thing. You'd actually have to talk to a serving fireman
or
in Chicago to know that. I'm a history student as a hobby, and I used to work with a type of military unit that helped fire departments in various types of things that would not include active shooters.
All right. Well, we appreciate that.
Thank you, and go Team Hochberg.
Hey, well, wow. Thank you, Brian. That's very nice. How about that? Nice little bonus plug, David. I don't know how you pulled that off.
That was awesome.
That was amazing.
Did we say we were going to talk to David after
this? I don't think we did.
Wow.
I don't think we did. It's crazy that I'm here. Did you, as he was saying that, did you just drive down?
Yes.
You weren't scheduled to be here.
I had this feeling that I was going to have a Go Team Hochberg, and I had to be here for it.
Wow, that was impressive. David Hochberg is here from Team Hochberg, obviously. I know this wasn't scheduled for something we were going to discuss with you, but I'm curious. I know what a huge Blackhawks fan you
yes.
are. Just a second or two about Stan Mikita, the loss
oh,
of Stan
Mikita. Huge loss, huge loss. I moved here when I was 7 years old, and I used to listen on a transistor radio to the Blackhawks game underneath my covers trying to go to bed. My parents say go to bed. I was been a huge hockey fan all my life, and you know I grew up with Stan Mikita, Bobby Hall, Magnuson, all those guys, and I would run home in high school when they were on the run with Bannerman and Secord and Savvy, Roenick, all those guys, and the ambassador was Stan Mikita, right?
Yeah.
He was the guy that was always
was
there.
Was he their first ambassador?
He was Bobby Hall and Stan Mikita that brought him back.
Right.
I heard John McDonough talking about how he called up Hall and then he called up Stan and.
Yeah.
He was one of the, you know, my childhood idols growing up, you know, one of my favorite Blackhawks.
You think he was kind of the prototype? We all are very familiar with Jonathan Toews, but I think Stan Mikita was the prototype for that kind of guy.
Oh, absolutely.
So great on the ice, but also so great off the ice.
He was a gentleman off the ice. He played hard every single night.
Yeah.
He was one of the first guys that wore the helmet. He didn't care, right? I mean, he was out there skating. You knew where Stan Mikita was because he was one of the few guys wearing the helmet.
Yeah.
And you know, it was cool just watching him skate around and just the ease and the grace and the passing and the shooting and how he played the game. He was at all ends. He backchecked. He was fast. He was a great passer. He was a great shooter.
Right.
It was phenomenal.
And I don't think, David, you tell me if I'm wrong, Bobby Hull got the bulk of the attention, and I don't think it bothered him. I think he was fine with that.
Listen, I didn't know Stan Mikita personally, so I can't speak for that. But all I could say is that he was a great teammate.
Yeah.
Right. You don't hear one person that has come on the radio speak one. And I was listening earlier to Steve, and Justin was on talking to a guy who ran into Stan, say, "Hey, can you sign this for my daughter?"
In the bathroom.
Right. Bring her over, and they sat in his living room for a couple of hours.
Oh, that was another one.
I mean, come on. I mean, you don't have that type of access today,
no.
Right? You know, walking around the neighborhood, hey, Mr. McKee, you might sign this. Why don't you bring over your daughter, and I'll sign it, you know, in person.
Come by the house.
Right, and they sit in the living room for a couple of hours.
Amazing.
You don't have that. I was at the game last year. I was fortunate enough when they did when his grandkids, and I almost cried. Right, it was that touching, because you knew. We all heard that he wasn't doing well and he was deteriorating, and just to see his family out on the ice, you know, one last shift, and they brought his grandkids out. It was you know, as a lifelong Blackhawks fan, as a 7-year-old boy growing up in the area. It was great, and the Blackhawks do it right, and whatever they're going to do to pay tribute to Stan and his family, I'm sure it'll be outstanding.
You had a great idea.
My idea was, and I think it's fairly obvious. You put his number on all the players' jerseys for this upcoming season.
Yeah, that's going to be something. But just the video and what they do ahead of time. Come on, all those guys, Jay Blunk and everybody in management, the Blackhawks, probably been working on this for a little bit. Probably have something all set, and I'm sure they're putting the finishing touches on it.
But although, how do you pick the highlights when there are so many?
Oh my God,
hundreds, if not thousands, of highlights with him.
It's good, and that's what I'm looking forward to see what the final tribute to what the Blackhawks do. And I'm sure it'll be opening night. Am I sure? It'll be sometime at the beginning of the season, but it'll be special. And I'm definitely going to go to that game. It's going to be kind of cool to see what they do, because they definitely honor the past stars.
Absolutely.
Like that. So I'm looking forward to that.
He's a Blackhawk fan. He's also vice president of mortgage lending at Pearl Mortgage, P-E-R-L. It's David Hochberg. I have a dirty four-letter word that you want to talk about today. D-E-B-T.
Yeah, debt. People are now back from summer vacations. People are now back from summer vacation sending their kids to college. So they've accumulated thousands of dollars on their credit cards, going out on summer breaks. Camp is now ending, and your kids are coming home, and a lot of people put those expenses on a credit card or took cash advances. What we're finding, pulling people's credit reports,
and people splurge over the summer. Let's be honest.
It is what it is, right? Your kid has to go to Cooperstown to play in the Little League tournament. There's $2,000-$4,000 because you got to schlep all the entire family out there. You have a week of lodging. You've got all the expenses. Listen, you do what you got to do. I'm not saying is it right or wrong, but now you're looking at a $20,000 credit card bill, $30,000 credit card bill. You got to go out. My kids start school in a week and a half. Okay, mm-hmm. So you got to go out and schlep out, buy them clothes, buy them all this stuff.
School supplies are not cheap.
And you've got all of this stuff coming down. And then the people sending their kids to college, guess what? You're now taking on more debt because you're signing for student loans that you didn't think you were going to sign for. You don't know how you're doing it. So the only saving grace is, listen, we're over $1 trillion in credit card consumer debt right now. Congratulations.
Those of us in this room, David, or who?
Well,
no, just me.
Just Wendy?
More Wendy, because, you know, she likes the finer things. But, you know, as a country, we're over $1 trillion in consumer debt. Congratulations to the United States consumer. And what's happening is that all of that debt, people don't know how to pay for it, right?
They start panicking at that point.
Well, and you start having anxiety attacks. Yep. And the only saving grace is that people's homes values have returned. And people need to start looking at what the cheapest form of money is. Do you want to, if you're sitting there with the $20,000, $30,000 with the credit card debt, the minimum monthly payment is typically 4%. So $20,000, you're at $800 a month. $30,000, you're at $1,200 a month. That's the equivalent of a $200,000 mortgage payment. So you could take that money, roll it into your loan, and drop a payment. I just got back from vacation, and we were boarding the plane, and a guy says, "I've got $115,000 mortgage, $15,000 credit card debt. I've got 4.375% interest rate. I've been in the loan for 10 years." I'm like, "Okay, you know what? It might be better to take a line of credit." I'm like, "Well, you know what? maybe a 15-year fix. I said, are you open for a 15-year fix? He's like, I was thinking about that. Long story short, combined his first loan with the $15,000 worth of credit card debt, put him into a 15-year fixed loan. He's going to save $200 a month, a little over $200 a month, and he's going to pay his loan off 5 years faster. Okay, so the money out there is still less expensive to roll it into your mortgage if you're lucky enough to have a mortgage, to use your home's equity, to rearrange your financial furniture, because it's all about what's coming out of your pockets. Okay.
Quick question.
Yes.
That scenario you just presented, is there any downside at all to that?
No, the guy's paying off his debt. He's shaving off years off his mortgage. Mm-hmm. He's going into a lower rate, and he's very happy.
Every part of it's positive.
Everything is positive. All right. You know what? And if it's not positive for somebody out there, who cares? This guy's ecstatic.
Yeah.
Okay? He's saving hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's all about the payment.
It's all about the payment.
It really is.
It really is. And if he wants to take the $200-$300 that he's saving to put it into his mortgage payment,
right,
he could pay it off in a little over 10 years and save even more money.
Mm-hmm.
What's so bad?
No, that's good.
You know, everybody's got something to say about somebody else. It's your financial situation.
Mm-hmm.
If it makes sense for you, then it makes sense for you. I know that's like kind of like a redundant statement, but you got to take a look at all hands on deck. And if you've got equity in your home that you could take out of your home to pay off your credit card debt to put yourself in a better position, or to roll in the student loan debt that you've taken out that you don't know how the heck you're going to pay back, how's that bad?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great thing.
David Hochberg is here, the Vice President of Mortgage Lending over at Pearl Mortgage. DavidH@pearlmortgage.com. That's your Twitter handle.
That's my, right? Is it? I think it's David Hochberg is my Twitter handle.
Yes.
That's
yes.
My superhero name.
No, that's your superhero name?
Yeah. It's David@perldavid.com is the email.
All right.
Yeah.
You have an Etsy account?
Not yet.
Not yet. That's
I'm
coming.
I'm going to get one.
Everyone's excited about that. All right. We'll take a break and then more of this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking with David Hochberg. It's Bill and Wendy, and David Hochberg, Vice President of Mortgage Lending at Pearl Mortgage, P-E-R-L Mortgage. And your NMLS number?
136-675. It's Pearl David, by the way, if you want to go. Or WGN David. They both take you to the same spot. Can I just give a special shout-out to Orion and Gloria Samuelson?
Of course.
Real quick. We did the we hosted,
reverse mortgage.
Yeah, we did the reverse mortgage, and Orion and Gloria helped me promote it. Gloria is Orion's wife. And we had close to 300 people. They had to bring in more chairs out in Huntley in order to accommodate
all of the
people.
There's a chair shortage in Huntley?
No, there's not.
Is that what you're trying to tell
Everybody
us?
Wanted to go to this symposium.
It was a reverse mortgage seminar, and there wasn't a shortage of chairs.
Oh, thank goodness,
right.
David.
No, there were plenty of chairs. Del Webb and Huntley has plenty of chairs, oh, Mr. Right. Left, so there's
good
nothing
news
to worry about. In case you're looking to host a party with more than 300 people, you've
the
got
chairs
it covered.
Are not an issue.
I saw the chair closet. Everything is good.
Oh, thank
yeah, we could have gotten another right. 100 people in there.
All so, right, good.
Yeah, I know you won't. I know you were going to stay up at night thinking about that. But we had close to 300 attendees. It was great. And I just want to thank Orion and his wife for helping me promote it.
Oh, good.
The people that attended, remember, our biggest seminar was out at the College of DuPage. We had over 400 people.
That was great.
A couple, 3 years ago that you helped me promote, and everybody was locked in. Same type of audience. People
mm-hmm.
were there to learn about the product,
mm-hmm.
and the feedback that we received were overwhelming. We've got, I think, like 20 people that we're in the process of talking to. Some people qualify today. Some people are looking to get information for later, but we've got 20 families that were, and the nice thing was, the kids were coming to learn about a reverse mortgage for their mom. One of my guys is meeting with two guys. One of them I went to high school with, I graduated with. I don't know who he was, but he stuck around. 80-year-old mom living in Niles in a home free and clear.
And she doesn't know how to do things, so it's nice that the kids are helping.
And don't have enough money to pay the real estate taxes that are due.
Yeah.
Don't have enough money to hire a caretaker to come in and take care of mom, which is what they're worried about. Don't have money to pay for snow removal and gardening and landscaping. Now with the reverse mortgage, they'll have more than enough money to take care of mom. So that's what it was all about. A lot of people came to the event, learned a lot of things. We knocked down a lot of misnomers about the reverse mortgage. We cleared a lot of brush, if you will. So a lot of people were asking great questions about what happens when I pass, the government takes my home. No, the government doesn't take your home. And it just cleared a lot of misconceptions about the product, and it made a lot of people, close to 300 people in the room, a lot more comfortable about possibly securing that type of product for themselves or their clients. We had a lot of financial planners there as well.
Think about people our age. They not only have
32, 33,
a little older, but they have to worry about maybe helping support their parents and help their kids pay off college loan debt. Boy, this is a
not
bad...
think about it. They are doing it.
That's a double whammy.
Your listeners are doing it. Your listeners are taking care of their kids in the morning, then running over to mom and dad's house to make sure mom and dad are taken care of. Then they're coming home or going to work, working full time, coming home, taking care of their family, running over to mom and dad's, making sure that they're taken care of, fed, meds, getting to bed, everything's good. No, it's not even a joke.
That was great.
He said it in rhyming.
Yeah. Well, look at that. Fed, meds, and getting to bed. Yeah, it wasn't even, it's not trying
like
to be a
doctor. Didn't plan
no,
that.
It's not like a Dr. Seuss book. I'm not that good. It, actually, it's pretty funny now that I think of it. It's very creative. I'll have to use it again.
Yeah, you should
toot,
use
toot.
It.
Meds, fed, and the bed. Okay, but this is what's on people's minds.
Yeah.
And this is what is keeping them up at night.
Yep.
Okay. And I've used this example before. 85-year-old, 87-year-old man living in a house, has three kids. Home is paid for, $400,000-$500,000 home. The kids are sending dad a G-note a month. Okay. Dad needs a new roof. And, you know, the roof's going to cost 15, 20 grand. And dad expects the kids to pay for it. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? Your dad is 85, 7 years old, whatever he is.
Yeah.
He could pull out over $250,000.
Right.
Stop paying the $1,000. He's sleeping on it every single night. He could gain access to that liquidity to do the roof and to do all this stuff and take the pressure off of you guys. So thank you to Orion. Thank you to Gloria. Thank you for all the attendees. It was great. I think we're going to try a webinar next time because we received a ton of calls. I can't get out to Huntley. Sorry, something came up. I think we're going to try a webinar. We've never tried a webinar. I think we're going to try a webinar. See how that, I got to talk to Ed, you know, Silhad and figure that out, you know, how to make sure that we don't go crash it in the middle of the event. But I think we're going to try a webinar so we could reach more people and they could do it in the comfort of their homes or do it in the comfort of their parents' homes or the people that are interested in needing the reverse mortgage so they could all learn together.
Here's why you need to call David Hochberg, because he will help you rearrange the financial furniture. Is that how you put it?
Yeah, that's good too. That's one of my favorites. Yes, because it doesn't matter if it's coming out of your right pocket or your left pocket. It's coming out of your pants pocket one way or the other. And if we could reduce the amount of money that's coming out of your pockets every single month and rearrange what you have going on. Okay, you plan on moving the next 5 years, guess what? You have $20,000 worth of credit card debt. Guess what? Your credit score is getting hit. Why don't we do a cash out refinance, drop you into an adjustable rate mortgage, pay off the credit card debt.
Because you're leaving anyway.
You're leaving anyway.
Years.
I mean, what are you doing? You know, pull out an extra 20, put it in your house, call up Frank Fontana and have Frank Fontana do some work on your house. Make
in
it
the
work.
Boom Boom Room.
In the Boom Boom room. Yeah, we were just talking about that in the green room. I met Frank. We're going to go have a coffee downstairs. Yeah, Frank and I bonded. You know, you're on vacation.
He's a great
or something.
Guy.
Yeah. And Frank and I are real tight now. We're going to start
I
doing
didn't know
some
that.
Stuff.
That's
yeah.
excellent.
Yeah, you should go on vacation
he did
more
my
often.
Remodeling.
He did a great job while you were gone. Yeah, he did a great job.
Awesome.
I'm very happy. It's not that we don't like you, Bill.
No, I get it. That's
all right.
Fine.
How do people reach you, David?
It's very easy. A number of different ways. You go to WGNDavid.com. That's our website. You could call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 312-751-1333. Love to help you and your listeners and everybody else out there. Oh, my God. Look at that. Look, a helicopter. The Coast Guard's coming. That
oh, my God.
So
it's like
cool.
right next to the window. That is freaking me out.
That is awesome. Coast Guard helicopter. Down
sorry, there. I know it's radio, but a helicopter just went in the alley, like right over the Chicago River in between buildings.
That was very cool.
Oh, did that yesterday, too.
We have a safety training today. What do we do when that happens? Freak out?
That's pretty cool.
Scary.
That's
awesome.
David, thank you.
Thanks
great
for
to
having
see
me.
You.
It's
thanks,
David Hochberg. He's the
I'm
going to
go join the
boy.
Coast Guard now.
You should join the Coast
cool.
Guard.
We'll take a break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor.
Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Listen.
We got Bert Convy and Mr. Rogers out of you in one show. This is going right to the Hall of Fame.
Today, or this year marks the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
50th since it started? No, it can't be. Can it?
The golden anniversary since it was first broadcast.
How about that?
And you watched it?
Sure. Almost every day.
I watched it. I didn't love it. I gotta fess up. I didn't love it.
That's sacrilegious.
I was.
Why didn't you love it? It was so gentle.
That's why I didn't like it.
Too gentle for you. Is that what it was?
Yeah, and
I did not like the puppets.
Oh, Mary.
The puppets. Well, they all sounded the same because they were him.
Yeah. Lady Elaine looked like she got hit by a Mack truck.
She was creepy. Meow,
meow, Mary doesn't like us, meow, meow.
And wasn't there a queen or who was the one?
King Friday.
Lady Eberlin.
Yeah.
Oh, she
was. She looked like
royalty.
She had pot marks all over her face.
I know, like she got hit by a truck and set on fire.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
She was scarred.
Wow, you guys.
I'm sorry.
She scarred me for life.
You're keeping the gentle streak alive.
I got to tell you, there was an article I read on Vox.com, and the person who wrote this article, I believe we are simpatico. We have the same views on this. Adam Eisenstadt on the line with us. Adam, how are you? Are you listening to any of this? Did you agree with any of the stuff I said?
Yes, I am in total agreement with you about the puppets and... I could barely get through an episode. To watch it every day would be unthinkable. But it turns out I started seeing all these tributes, and there was a pretty good show on PBS with a lot of celebrities showing them watching the show. Michael Keaton actually was an intern on the show.
Michael Keaton was?
I believe.
Yeah.
I think he went to, he studied acting in Pittsburgh, but he was the host of the show, and this kind of spurred me to write the piece. But I, it turns out I'm a lot more familiar with the show than I thought, because at the time there were about four channels to choose from. I'm dating myself, I imagine. This was before cable.
We're that age too, you know, and we watched Electric Company, which was awesome, and Sesame Street, and Zoom. Oh my God, I wanted to be Nina with the guitar and no shoes.
Yeah.
Zoom. That was another one. I like that one, too, a lot.
But then you watch Mr. Rogers, and I think I watched it because everybody else watched it, and I didn't hate it, but it just kind of did nothing for me. You felt that way, but then you had a change of heart about him. Why don't you explain about this?
Well, I actually did hate the show. I just didn't like it mainly because I didn't like the host, especially the voice, and it just did not seem, it didn't have any excitement or flash like those other shows. But it turns out Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was produced in my hometown, Pittsburgh. I had a Chef Brockett was actually on my paper route.
You delivered papers to Chef Brockett?
Yes, and his wife, Barbara. He was there a lot, too. He was more or less like he was on the show. By the way, I didn't like the puppets either. I'm in full agreement. But it turns out I lived two blocks away from the actual Mr. Rogers, which I never knew. You want me to tell the story about
how
we met?
Yes. So,
Well, I was out soliciting donations for my Little League team, which is something we had to do every year. And it was pretty hard. They made it hard. I think it was just you didn't really get anything like a raffle ticket. So I was on this beautiful street lined with mansions, and I should have known, because probably this happened every year. I did not get a cent, and I was trying.
No one was giving. How old were you at this time, Adam?
I was 12. I think it was probably my last year of Little League.
And none of these people that lived in these mansions were giving you any money. Cheapskates.
Yeah.
That's why they have the mansions.
Well, yes, what they say. Probably it wasn't even them answering the door, for that matter. But it was a tough sell. Anyway, I was just horribly disappointed. It's very draining to beg strangers for money and not even get anything. It's humiliating, essentially. As any kid who's ever gone gone through that could attest. I finally got to Mr. Rogers' house, and I imagine he lived there for a while, but I had no idea. This was literally two blocks from where I lived for the first 18 years of my life, where I grew up, the neighborhood, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, literally.
His real neighborhood.
And so he opened the door, and it was him. Of course, I knew it was him, but I sort of played it cool, like I didn't recognize him, and I went through my spiel about the problem with this, the way we were dispatched to get donations was we were supposed to say that we were offering a share in the league. Instead of, you know, saying, give me money so I can play baseball this year, it was like, buy a share in the league. And I had a pitch worked out, and he really listened to me. He invited me in, and he was as nice as you could imagine him being. No different, really, from the very guy on TV, which I think even then was surprising to me. And he was very, just very gentle, of course. And he was Mr. Rogers in the flesh.
The guy you hated, by the way.
The man you hated.
I didn't hate him. I mean, I didn't like the show. I mean, it was an aesthetic thing, and I didn't think all that gentleness and all that didn't really comport with what I knew to be reality of parents and children. It was like, go play in the street. They weren't. It was a different time. Parents were not that involved in their kids every day and every activity.
Sure.
I think that is a factor, but on his show, you wouldn't know that. It was like a utopia.
Right, right, right. Very gentle. What was his house like, Adam? What kind of house did Mr. Rogers live in?
Well, I have to say, this, I alluded to that it was called Beechwood Boulevard Street. It's right up from where Andrew Mellon had his estate. It was just now Mellon Park. This was literally a stretch of mansions, one after the other, and he had a very nice house.
What did the foyer look like when he invited you in?
Well, this was a while ago. It's a little vague, but I saw a lot of other foyers that day. I did see beautiful. You get a sense of, if you walk giant places, you could get a sense that if you went any further, it would just be just spacious and polished and impeccable.
Yeah.
It wasn't like where I live.
Yeah.
That's what I recognized.
Just two blocks away from you, but so different.
Yeah, I mean, I had a modest house, but it was just, it's a really nice neighborhood in general, but this particular stretch, and he was kind of at the end of it, was just lavish.
All right, so he invited you in. I'm going to move you along a little bit because we're running out of time, Adam. Sorry. But so he invited you in, and you gave him your pitch, and you felt like he truly listened to you and asked you questions.
Yeah, he did, and this was just unheard of. This had never happened. Not only did I just didn't get money from anyone else, but no one cared. That was obvious. He cared. This was the thing that was so striking. I mean, I was just a stranger asking for money. He was asking me about Little League. So this was in his bailiwick, so to speak. This was kids. And he had heard stories about, and it still happens, you know, these psychotic parents who assault coaches and umpires and scream at their kids. He had heard that, and he asked me about that. And I just said, I just really wanted to get out of there with something.
Yeah,
that was my last place. And I said, oh, no, sir, not in our league. And he gave me a dollar.
Oh, how about that?
It was a very, I mean, this is a three-minute, exchange, more or less. But it was just striking because it was so different than anything that had come before. And he did give me money.
A whole dollar. You should have said, Adam, you should have said, I just came from Captain Kangaroo's place. He gave me $20.
That would have been, you know, I was nervous, I have to say. I was in the presence of whatever I thought about the man. He was an icon. He was on TV.
Sure.
But he was just the most human, gracious guy that you would imagine. And the questions that he asked, the care that he was showing about Little League per se, you know, is it good for the kids? Is it healthy for them? It was exactly what you would imagine Mr. Rogers would ask.
Did you start liking him after that? Did you start watching his show with a new eye?
No,
you still didn't.
It was still the same show, but I just thought, I didn't think anything of him as so much before, other than I didn't like the show and the puppets. But it stuck with me how genuine he was. I just never really forgot about how absolutely in tune with the image on TV, which is, I don't know if that's that common. I mean, people are playing a role, and even if they're more or less like how they seem, he was exactly the Mr. Rogers saintly figure
that everyone loved.
I appreciated that, and I just, he was the real thing. It just stuck with me.
Adam Eisenstadt on the line with us. You can read this on Vox.com. You're a freelance writer. One of the lines that really stuck out was you said about Fred Rogers, he offered a glimpse into how things could be if adults treated children with real respect. That's really touching.
Thank you. I mean, it seemed utopian on TV, and I didn't know anyone like that. My childhood was fine, more or less, but it just was rare, if not unheard of, to think of parents that had so much interest in, because I mean, people were busy and they have their lives, and it's difficult, I imagine, to raise a family with everything else going on. So it was nothing that I knew or heard of, but it didn't seem like a bad thing if someone was putting you, if not on a pedestal, but caring about your thoughts and your individual perspective. I don't think that was too common.
No,
you know, as a strategy of a child rearing.
Your views changed on the man, and after reading your article, my views changed on Mr. Rogers, and I want to know if you'll be my neighbor, Adam.
Hmm. Absolutely.
Say yes. Wendy will give you a dollar.
I'll give you two.
Yeah, oh, inflation.
His name is
inflation.
Adam Eisenstadt. That's where you can find. Where's your website?
It's my name, Adam Eisenstadt. EISENSTAT.com is my website.
Great article. Just wanted to meet you, and we shared the same views. Puppets are still bad.
Oh, Wendy. Adam, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Take care.
Exactly the same way I felt.
I'm sure a lot of people were put off by that gentleness and that, you know, maybe the puppets petrified them. I get that. I understand that. But, I mean, he railed against kids' television. Aside from being so gentle on his own show, he went out of his way to say to other people making kids' television, you're ruining kids. You don't want it to be violent. You want it to be gentle. You want kids to be, just a gentler type. And he was not happy with what he saw.
He did a great job on and off the TV.
Yeah.
And I'm anxious to see that
documentary.
Won't
You Be My Neighbor?
Yeah.
Yeah. Playing in theaters now. All right, we'll take a quick break and then back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, I'm scouring our text line.
I am too.
981-7200. Is it for the same reason?
Yeah, well, sorry about the connection on that guy. The phone was awful. He's definitely a writer.
Yes.
The article is fantastic.
Yes.
The big one, a question that I wanted to have answered, can you ask why King Friday's Castle was built with a set of train tracks around it? Kind of whack. would love to have been in the creative meeting. But isn't that where the trolley, Mr. Trolley?
Yeah, it kind of went all through the neighborhood of make-believe, so you didn't want to leave the castle out, certainly.
Yeah,
that's why. A prime focal point of the neighborhood of make-believe. I'm looking at the text line for the reason that anytime we've ever talked about Mr. Rogers, whether we talk about him for 5 seconds or for a half an hour, people text in and they say, did you know that Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, was a sniper during the war?
Go to Snopes.com.
And took out dozens and dozens of people. That did not happen. I know it's an urban legend. It's a myth. It's a strange story to think about. But people always go, hey, the guy was a sniper, even though he was gentle on TV. He was during the war. No, he wasn't. He was not a sniper.
Be honest. When you heard that originally, didn't you go, oh, my gosh. But then you researched it.
Yes.
A bit. The internet made it easy because I heard it many years ago.
Times. It didn't happen.
No, he was not a sniper.
Not during the war. Privately, he had a sniping business on the side, but it had nothing to do with the war.
All right. We will take a quick break. Then we will talk to Dean Richards because movies are opening. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is this opening day?
Well, no. Tomorrow will be.
Oh, so we get a preview
Dean before
on that.
It happens. That's
Look
right.
at that. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points. Dean.
It's Dean.
Why does it feel like I haven't heard that song in months?
It's been a while.
Because we haven't talked to you in a while.
It's been a little while,
didn't,
Dean.
Didn't we talk last week?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Still, it seems like forever.
Am I that forgettable?
No, it just... We were, you know,
weeks are long without you.
Yes, that's so true. Very romantic, but so true. Dean, they're changing the rules over the Academy Awards. What's going on?
I think this is a good change. Some industry insider saying this is the end of Hollywood.
Oh, no.
This is the worst thing that could happen to the movie industry ever. I don't think this is a terrible thing that's happening with this. So yesterday they announced some changes designed to try to bring new people to watching the Academy Award show. Because while the ratings are still huge for the Oscar show, they have been down slightly for the last couple of years. But it's still one of the most watched television events of the year.
Sure.
But they're just trying to stop the bleeding on this. So they did a few things. Number one, they said that the telecast will never be longer than 3 hours, which I'm good with.
Yeah.
Last year it was 4 and some change.
Yeah.
No show should be that long. They're going to move some of the technical awards presented off the air during the actual commercial breaks. Which I think,
easy
for me to say. You know, I'm not a costume designer or a sound guy or probably some of those kind of awards that we're no longer going to be seen given on the stage anymore. But they'll still be acknowledged, I imagine, on the air with some graphics.
Yeah.
They're going to move the show up earlier in the year. Traditionally, it's the final award show of the year, and I think that their feeling is that people are so sick of award shows by the time that the Oscars come on that they just don't want to watch it anymore because there's the Screen Actors Guild and Critics' Choice and Golden Globes, and the list goes on and on and on. So that's going to be different. But the most controversial of the moves is this addition of a new category that will splinter the Best Picture category. There will now be Best Picture of the Year, but also Outstanding Achievement of in Popular Film, which, to my understanding of reading all of this, means blockbuster movies that don't normally get nominated outside of some, you know, technical awards, special effects, that sort of thing, which would open the door to movies this year, for example, like Black Panther, like Mission Impossible, like Star Wars, Avengers, movies like this that... You know, movie heads don't consider, artsy enough to be considered as Best Picture.
I have a question then, Dean. What if you have a movie like Titanic that is both a popular film, but it's also considered to be,
artsy.
More artsy? Yeah. What do you do? Can you win in both categories?
I don't think so.
No?
Because the best that I understand this is that, you know, the nomination process happens by vote of the membership of the Academy of Motion Picture of Arts and Sciences.
Yeah.
So it'll be the movies themselves that put themselves up for nomination in certain categories, and then the Academy voters will vote on what gets nominated or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be up to the movie to decide into which category they would like to be considered for nomination.
Oh, interesting.
And then it'll be up to the Academy voters to decide. They'll look at all the people who put in themselves up for nomination, and then they'll break it down and see how many will actually get nominated.
Do you like this?
I do like this. I think it's about 20 years late, actually. Yeah. I don't think this is a terrible idea, because the idea that Star Wars never won any major categories is ridiculous to me as a huge Star Wars fan.
Right.
And the idea that Black Panther that came out this year, that if you were to ask me right at this moment what's my favorite movie of 2018, it's Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
For all the action and for all the comic book fun that's in it.
Yeah.
But it's an incredibly powerful story, too, that might get ignored if it were up against something like whatever this year's The Shape of Water is, or whatever this year's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri might be. I mean, those are the kinds of films that tend to win Best Picture. But those are also the kinds of films that don't bring in a lot of box office dollars.
Right.
Meaning that people are not going to see those movies because they consider them too fringy. I was laughing as much as I praised The Shape of Water last year.
Yeah.
My brother said, "Oh, it's this Shape of Water movie I hear you talking about." I said, "Oh yeah, I had they send out DVD copies of them to the critics because we all vote for the different award shows." I said, "I have a copy of it if you want to borrow it." And he borrowed it, and my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, said it was the weirdest movie that she's had ever
really?
Seen.
Wow.
I had forgotten about some of the self-satisfaction scenes that are in it.
Yes.
That my sister-in-law was very uncomfortable with.
Oh.
And my brother also said he just didn't get the whole falling in love with the sea creature.
Oh, all right.
It is weird. It is really weird. Out there.
Sure it is.
Yeah, I get it. I get that.
But so don't you see
it,
this?
It doesn't bother me that's going to be unchanged. That there still will be a category for movies like that. And now there will be a category for the big blockbuster movies that, that probably generally will be action movies. But, I would love to see some of these other movies also get some critical acclaim. I would have liked to have seen them add a best stunt category.
Oh, that's interesting.
As well, because that's a huge part of the motion picture business these days.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I don't know. What I don't know is, remember a few years ago, I forget how many, it's probably more than 10 years now, that they increased the number of nominees in the best picture category from 5
to as many as 10.
As many as 10 now.
Right.
So I don't know if that's going to go back to 5 or if that will stay 10.
Mm.
If this new category will also be 10. Mm. Those are things that we don't know just yet. But I like all of these moves.
All right.
Especially that the show's only going to be 3 hours, which means I get one more hour of sleep.
That's a positive.
That's all right, I care about. Me.
Dean Richards is our guest. We'll talk more about movies in just a little bit, so stick around for that.
All right, we are chatting with Dean Richards from WGN-TV Morning News. You can also hear him on Sunday mornings here on this very radio station from 9 to 1.
You know who's my guest on Sunday?
Oh, whom? Please tell us.
Whom?
A man you may have heard of, a meteorologist by the name of Tom Skilling.
Tom Anniversary Skilling?
Celebrating his 40th frickin' anniversary on WGN.
Wow.
This coming Monday is his 40th anniversary here.
Freaking 40th.
Yeah.
I'm Tom freaking Skilling.
Oh, excellent.
What's
good
he
get.
Gonna he's I just love him. Is he gonna talk movies? Is he gonna talk about his life? Is he gonna talk weather? Is he gonna talk Hawaii?
Don't know. You
I
know,
can't
it's
wait.
With
I'll
Skilling.
Be listening.
With Skilling, you just...
he's a loose cannon.
You say hello and let him go.
Yeah, yep. You just hold on. It's like a wave machine.
Solid advice. Solid advice. All right, Dean, I have to ask you first and foremost about this movie, Black Klansman.
Yes.
Interesting story, interesting title. What
true
can you
story.
Tell us about it?
True yeah. story. A true story of a man by the name of... I'm blanking on his name right now.
Oh, all right.
But I'm looking it up while I'm stalling. Stallworth.
Ron Stallworth. Right here. Sorry.
Wendy to the rescue.
Thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome. Ron Stallworth.
He was the, I say his name was, we can edit all this part out. His name, Ron Stallworth, and he was the very first African-American police officer in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And one of his first assignments was to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. Now, as an African-American man, this would be a little difficult to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. So he comes up with this brilliant plan where the real Ron Stallworth, the African-American Ron Stallworth, talks to the Ku Klux Klan on the phone. And another fellow police officer plays white Ron Stallworth and goes to the Ku Klux Klan meetings, encounters them. This other officer, played brilliantly by Adam Driver, by the way. It's fascinating that this is a true story, that something so preposterous could really happen. Now, this movie is stars John David Washington, and I hope this is the last film where we have to keep saying over and over again that he's Denzel Washington's son, because I think it diminishes his own talent, because he is so good in this movie. He clearly has gone into the family business and has the talent for it. He is outstanding in this movie. It's directed by Spike Lee, and I think I've been super critical of Spike Lee movies, the last several of them, but I think this is maybe one of the best Spike Lee movies, certainly in 10 years. It is brilliantly shot, brilliantly told. It's told with a degree of seriousness in the problems of race relations in America back in the 70s when this is all set, and how it relates to problems which continue today. And it's told with a great deal of humor at the same time. There is an underlying political thread that goes through this movie as well in dealing with the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacists, where back in the 1970s they're talking about how white supremacy could never be considered, you know, by any major political force in America right now. That could never happen in America.
No.
So there is a great deal of relevance also in this script. I think this is so well done in so many ways. I give it a Dean's List A.
Wow.
It's a little bit violent. It's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit rough around the edges, some of the language and things, but It's a raw look at what really did happen back in the 70s. I like that one of the cars that are featured in this movie was my first car. That
really?
That may be the reason why I'm giving this such a good review.
Could be. Could be,
like,
Dean.
Oh,
I have. Oh, go on.
What was it? What car?
A GTO.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a GTO. Cool, sure. Like 60. Little mine GTO. Was 68, but they all looked very similar, so it might have been 67 in the movie or 68, or I don't know.
An interesting coincidence, my favorite Spike Lee movie of all time is Inside Man, which starred Denzel Washington.
Hmm.
So it ties in, doesn't it?
I'm sure that, you know, Spike took an extra look at John David Washington because of the talent of his dad, for sure. But man, does he
is that good?
He earns his stripes in this. He's
like
great. Adam Driver is great. And one of my favorite roles in this movie is Topher Grace, who we used to know from That 70s Show, who plays David Duke in the movie.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's genius, and it's hilarious. I can't recommend this movie enough. I think it's great.
What are the other movies coming out? The Meg, about people fighting Meg Ryan? What's that? What do we need to know about this?
I star in this movie as her number one fan.
Yeah.
One of my number one interviews that went sour.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan. This movie is about, I believe it's the correct pronunciation is a Megadon, a prehistoric shark, which is believed to have gone extinct. There is an underwater research laboratory that is doing research and testing on the depths of the ocean. And while they are examining this, they run into some creatures which they never knew existed before, one of which is this giant shark that looks that makes Jaws look like a guppy. compare it. It's the biggest shark that you've ever seen. And this movie, I went into this thinking that it's going to be stupid, like Sharknado. The movie's going to be so bad that maybe the only way that I'll enjoy this movie is that it's so bad that it's good, like I do Sharknado movies. But this movie is actually quite a good, exciting, white-knuckling movie. It's about, you know, taking down this giant prehistoric shark that's biting through boats and submarines and, you know, it seems like can, you know, take anything down. So Jason Statham stars in this movie. He's probably the biggest name that you would know in this film. But
Rainn Wilson
plays
question
a, sort of
am I good in it
eccentric millionaire in this movie. What's that?
He, as Dwight Schrute always says, question on The Office.
Yeah, that's right. And Lee Bingbing is in this.
Lee Bingbing.
Who?
Lee Bingbing. Wendy.
Lee Bingbing is also featured in the
Lee Bingbing.
Who is that?
You know,
from her other, the famous from her other Bingbing movies. Brothers.
Yes, the Bing Bing
Don't
Brothers
you remember
Circus.
The Bing Bing Brothers?
She's an actress. She's very good. I like Lee Bing Bing.
Because of her name.
It's mostly, yeah.
It's actually Bing Bing Lee.
Oh, it is?
But
I always call her Lee Bing Bing.
Bill must have missed the...
I'm in a hurry.
Bill's way is funnier, so I'm going to leave it that way. Ruby Rose is in the movie, another name that...
Batwoman.
That you
right?
No,
she's the new Batwoman.
Ruby Rose Bing Bing.
Yeah, Ruby Rose Bing Bing.
She is the new Batwoman, right?
Yeah.
But a fine cast, slightly corny story, but the action more than makes up for it. And this one is also done with a little bit of tongue in cheek, not corny like Sharknado. It's not super serious and it's not super ridiculous. I actually wound up leaving this movie and I thought it was really quite good. And I can't believe I'm giving it a Dean's List B+.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I like hearing that. I want to see it. All right. And then give us one more. Dog Days.
Dog
this
Days.
Looks dreadful.
Well, you remember Love American Style.
Sure.
Yes.
There are several, you know, Truer Than the Red, White, and Blue, as the song went.
Yeah.
Where there would be several different little scenarios going on, vignettes, if you will. People falling in love and getting together. This movie should be called Dog American Style because it is five different vignettes, five different scenarios of people who engage with one another through their dogs.
I would love this.
Common interest is that they all have dogs. Now, really, the actual stories of the humans, I could care less. They're actually pretty stupid, and I wish the humans would just leave the movie if that's that's any way possible. The dog part of this movie is very sweet and very loving and very touching. So I actually wound up giving this a Dean's List B.
Ha ha!
It's Billy Bing Bing. It's kind of goofy, but if you love dogs, I love dogs. Wendy
so does
loves
Bill.
Dogs.
Yeah,
Wendy
Bill.
Loves dogs. Bill hates anything not named Bing Bing. But if you love dogs, I think you're going to actually be a little teary-eyed watching this movie. It's very, very sweet.
Yeah.
Bing Bing.
What is Dean's List
my
for
new
this?
Nickname, my new nickname for you.
Yeah, Bill, Bing Bill, Bing. Bill. Billy Bing Bing.
I gave this a B. Dean's List B on this.
And Lee Bing Bing's dad, of course, did some time in jail. Do you remember which jail he was in, Dean?
Was he in Sing Sing?
Sing Sing. Yeah, Bing Bing was in Sing Sing.
Oh, my God.
Dean, thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
Thank you, Dean.
For
sorry.
But it's Sing Sing, Rhode Island, R-I, not L-I.
So, right. How crazy
Sing
is that?
Sing Sing Re.
It doesn't make sense. I don't understand it. Dean, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Dean.
We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Launch. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.